Okay, Ramstein's not like that. Starts off with a, he has a long introduction. We'll go through it because it's good to repeat what he says. What he says is important. B'tzedek, he quotes the pasuk. B'tzedek kol imrei pi, ein bahem niftal ve'ikesh. It's a pasuk in Mishlei. That all the words of my mouth are just. There is no crookedness or errors in them. Kulam nechochin lemeivin. They're all straight and clear to those who understand. V'yisharam, and they're nechochin means correct. They're all correct to those who understand, and they're straight. Lemotzei das, to those who know how to seek knowledge. Those are the method to approach knowledge. But in order to gain knowledge, you have to have a certain method. You don't have the method. You don't know what knowledge is. So naturally, nothing makes any sense. Adam Aram Kosadas. An intelligent person hides knowledge. Hides knowledge. He doesn't give it out to everybody who comes along because he realizes that knowledge can be harmful to certain people. Certain sometimes, right? Mm-hmm. Many times, for instance, if a doctor wants a patient to take a medication, he will not tell him what the medication does because if he tells him, he might decide not to take it. Might have certain side effects. The individual doesn't want to, wouldn't want to do it, so therefore he won't tell him. And many times people who are ignorant, who do not live by reason, they must be protected from certain knowledge, because knowledge can be harmful. Similarly, in regard to the soul, not just in regard to the body, but in regard to the soul as well, certain knowledge can be harmful to different people, because they might be doing a good action, but for a wrong reason. And if you tell them the right reason, they'll stop doing it. Okay. So that's why one must guard knowledge. But leif kesilim mikrei velos, but the fools speak out in folly. A wise person keeps back even knowledge, but a fool puts forth even nonsense. That's the pasuk in Mishlei. So Rama means, what the Rama means is that many times things are written in a clear way, in a right way. But when a fool comes along, he makes it crooked and he presents it in its completely distorted fashion. So he says, Ein zeh bilti motzi, it's not to be unfound. She yischavein ha'odam levaris anyonim, that a person will try to explain something. Kloma, inyan mishmasim, a certain pasuk. The divrei hezber, in a clear manner. Peshutim ubrurim, straight and clear. Shadiyek Bahem Lahasir Kol Safik, as the person tried to remove all types of doubts. With a Salik Efshurios, and to remove possibilities, Beor Acher. Beor Acher. Hold it. Beor Acher. What is that, huh? Oh, Beor Acher. Beor Acher means in an allegorical way. Allegorical way. Vafa piken yivaru. In an allegory means like a mushroom. Okay. Vafa piken. And even though he tries to be so clear and so precise and to give a mushroom and to clarify everything 100%, still and all he says, yivarim bo chole hanafashas. People who are ill mentally. He means that they don't know how to think well. Well, he calls them chol nefashos. So there's two reasons why a person can't think properly. One reason is he doesn't have the mental ability, and two, because he has emotions which he has no control of. He wants to see things a certain way. He can't face the reality. Okay? So he says, Me'osam divrei hezber hepach hamishpat asher nischav levarav. So this person will many times explain the thing in the exact opposite way that it was intended. In other words, one person might sit down and try to clarify an Indian, and somebody comes along and explains it completely the opposite of what he intended to explain. He says, "Ukva'ira kiyotza bazeh," and this already happened. But divrei Hashem yisala, this already happened with the words of God. God tried to explain something in a simple, clear fashion, and people came and they took it to mean the exact opposite. He says, "What is it?" He says, "And this is." When the Rabban shall call on Hashem, Moshe Rabbeinu, try to teach us in the mitzvos Hashem, Shehu Yisala Echad Vein Kiyotzeba. Try to teach us that God is one and that there is no one like Him. He's different than any other existence. Ulesalek mi daitenu, Osan Hasvaros Habatelos. And He tried to remove from our minds the nonsensical ideas. Moshe Rabbeinu tried to explain through God's words, Moshe Rabbeinu put down God's words, which was intended to explain that God is one, and there are multi-powers governing the universe, but there's only one force. Amar, and he said, the Bir of the Yesod, in order to explain this fundamental principle of Yahadus. So what did God say? He said, Shema Yisrael ad Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. Right? Can somebody close the door back there? Oh, God is one, right? Simple and clear. Isn't that simple and clear? I mean, how much clearer could you be? So God is one. Hashem, our God, He is one. Zine lamdu hanotrim, however the Christians learned, the Pasuk says from this Pasuk, ki Hashem yisala shlishi, that God is three. Lishlosha. V'amru, three parts, yeah. V'amru Hashem, they said God's name. V'amar Elokeinu, God again. V'amar Hashem, arei lishlosha shemos. They said these are three terms. V'amar Acher Kein Echad, and then afterwards he said one. Raya, it says, they consider this a proof shehem shlesha, that God is three. V'shehashlesha Echad, and that the three is one. V'shehashlesha Echad, and that the three is one. Yis'ala mimashe sachlo. Of course, God is above from what their foolish interpretation is. He says, so you see, here's an instance where God tried to make clear one idea, namely that He is one. Through Moshe Rabbeinu, through the Torah. And the Christians came along, not only couldn't they see the clear idea which is explicit in the Pasuk, but they took that Pasuk as a proof to the contrary that He's three. Why? Because they said it's mentioned three times. I mean, it's an utter crest of privilege. There's nothing to answer. It's a stupid thing. I mean, anyone is... You can't answer the pasuk doesn't mean that, because a person can say a pasuk means anything. You can say Shema is one word, Hashem is another word, that's two, Elokeinu is three, Ad Hashem is four, and Echad is five. They can say these five too, and the five is one. I mean, you can count the letters and say as many letters as you have there, that's how many gods there are. I mean, if a person argues that way, then there's no way to talk to him. See, that's what the Rambam is saying. In other words, the person will take a sentence that's written explicitly, and he will not accept the explicit meaning, but he'll take it and twist it around and make it into his own person. And he can't talk to him anymore.
But nothing's explicit in
the Talmud. That's not explicit?
Everything.
God is one.
Simple sentence.
But a person could take any sentence, and he could twist it around and simply not listen to what you're meaning. You tell the person, I want you to go down the street. Right? Now a person can take that and twist it around and make it into anything he wants. And if he wants to start new rules, he'll say, the possibilities are infinite. He can just say, whenever he says down, it means into the ground. Right? And you can twist 50 million possibilities. A person can do it. Any sentence can start working as one. Of course, the sentence states clearly, Hashem Echad means God is one. Hashem Elokeinu means this God, which is our God, Hashem Echad, He is one. It's in a simple sentence. There is no way that anyone, in their right mind, can say that God is three out of that sentence. There's no, and not alone could they not say it's three, but to bring a proof from the fact that there's three terms to say it's three, this is completely absurd. It's like taking a sentence and making up your own set of rules and then saying this is a proof to what I'm saying. And is that clear or is it not clear? I asked to mention that he's Elokeinu when he's mentioning at the same time when he's saying Echad. You ask questions. You understand? That's something else. But to say that this sentence proves that God is three is completely insane. I mean, it's the height of absurdity. And yet people can do this because they insist on, this is what he calls chulei nefashos, an illness of the soul, which means that the person wants certain things to be so. So whatever he sees, he's going to try to interpret it into what he thinks. You know what I mean? I mean, we see this in everyday life. People want certain things to be a certain way, so all information that comes in, it could be exactly the opposite. They'll translate and interpret it to mean exactly what they want. So here's what they're wrong. Of course a person could be trained to and ruined to the point where his mind totally doesn't operate anymore, and anything you tell him will twist it around. But we say that's an ill individual. That's not a healthy person. You understand what I mean? But there is such a thing as a person has a clear mind. Whatever the reason is, there's such a thing as a person has a clear mind and sees things clearly the way they are. You understand? The person has the ability. Not every person has the ability, but some people have the ability. Some people don't have the ability. What all the Rambam is saying is that people who don't have this ability will twist things around many different ways. And for those people, it's hopeless. We can never straighten them out. We can't do anything. But a person who is intellectually perfected him you can help because you can write something down and you might see it, even though you didn't see it before. So, right. The kikashen is chavanu lohoir al yesod gadol shenasalmu mimenu. Because when we try to explain a very important principle that most people did not see, nistapko al yedekach. And so, nistapko al yedekach, hu yesod boru pashabum hashem basachot. And this is a fundamental principle that is clear and understood by the nation. Nevertheless, when we try to explain it, they came with thousands of questions. They didn't understand what they were talking about.
This was something that was simple.
Yeah, simple thing which they didn't understand. The who, and that is as follows. She'anu kashen echlafnu l'mashen echabanu v'mishpat etara b'yadinyal. When we were forced to explain what the mishpat etara, the laws of the Torah and the dinim, we intended at that time to simply fulfill the will of God by writing the Chibur of the Yad HaChazaka. He says that was his purpose. Not in order to receive any financial reward, reimbursement from people, or to receive any honor, but in order to explain and to help others to understand. To help a person whose knowledge is small in these areas, in order to help them understand that which Chazal said, which is very deep. So we try to explain, like being means, the go-between from Chazal between the average person. According to the way we thought, that we took difficult things and we explained them, broke them down so people would understand them. The kibatnu v'chibarnu dvarma fuzar and prudu, we explained things from different areas, put them together. And we knew that we were gaining. Why? Yeah. And how we know at any rate that we're gaining. Why? Because right. If people he says, because he can't lose. He says, why? Because if people understand what he's writing, he says, so then certainly he helps others, right? But even if they didn't understand what he was talking about. And it didn't make it any clearer. He says, well, then in that case we only have the reward that God gives. But the actual performance we don't have, because God gives reward according to your intentions, not according to what the results are. Okay. And because we understood this, that's why we put together everything that we wrote. In other words, the Rambam says he knew when he wrote that people might not understand, people might not understand what he's saying. But he said this way, he said, if they do understand, so then he's benefited them. And if they don't understand, so at least he has the reward of attempting to do a good action. Okay, next logic. Okay, now he said he saw like this. When he started put together the Yad HaChazaka, so he saw as follows. He says it doesn't make sense to put together all the dinim and all the laws and to leave the fundamentals, the basics, the Yesod HaDas. Not to explain the Yesod HaDas and not to teach others in the ways of the Yesod HaDas. He said, and in specific, when we saw people who consider themselves chachamim, the shu mechachmei Yisrael benes, and he considered himself to be one of the big chachmei Yisrael, the shu yadei derech halacha, and he knows the halacha, and the yisav of eaten the mechampe shaltar min uro lefidim yano, and according to his imagination, he's a person who always waged the battles of Torah, and always argued in Torah, was very esoteric, very deep, very, very learned. The Humasupik, and the same person who is so deep in learning could be in doubt whether God has a body, an eye, a hand, a foot, and intestines, because of the psukim, because of what he reads in psukim, or whether he's not a body. So now when he saw people like that, the people that know how to learn and spend their times and consider themselves big Chachmei Yisrael, and yet they do not know whether God is a simple thing, whether God is physical or non-physical. He says some of them from a specific land, a specific country that he knew, he says, came to the conclusion that God is visible. And they considered anyone who denied this to be a kofar, an apikaris. They called him a min and apikaris. Why? Because they took the drushos that are in the Masechta Brachos, in the beginning of Masechta Brachos, and they explained them to Pashtan, simply, literally. Gemara says God is on film every day. It means God is a hand and God is a head. And similar things I had heard from others whom I've never seen also, as well. So Ram says, therefore, he saw fit to write in the Yadach HaZakah, to write down the Yesodot, the fundamentals, the basics of the Emunah, on which the whole Torah rests. Because he saw what? The what? Yeah. Sure, he's going to interpret that way, right? So that's why he said he saw fit to put down the fundamental principles of the Yahadis in the beginning of the Yadach HaZakah. Yes. The Kashay Adano Athela Masida Moh, the Shemus of Pakin, Lemedam Shahim Chachme Yisrael. He says, now, when we saw these people who are really destroying, themselves, destroying others, and they are in doubt, themselves about basic principles of Yisrael Yadav, and they consider themselves Chachme Yisrael, and really they are the greatest fools. Why? He says, Hey, my Yosef Sichlim Bnei, they're the greatest fools of people. The Yosef Tomin of Hamas, and they are further astray than animals. Ukranis Malu Mochosayim Plos Vazayos, and their minds are filled with things that are impossible and foolish and nonsensical. And imaginations. Just like fools, ignorant people. We saw that it is important that in the Halacha, in the Sefer of Halacha, we should explain the Yesod HaDas in a way of derech hodah, in a way of information, he says. Not derech lamidus, not in a way of explanation. In an informative way, not an explanative way. Why? Because he says like this. He says, because in order to explain these things really deeply, prove them, that God isn't physical, Hashem Achad, he says, you must have knowledge in sciences, many sciences, of which the Chachmei Torah don't know. He said, I don't know anything. Like we explained in the Manarucha. Therefore, he says, we tried, at least, that the simple conclusions should be known to everyone, even though they don't know the proofs. So that's why what the Rambam did in the Yadach HaZakah in the beginning was, he wrote down the conclusions, metaphysical conclusions. He didn't write the proofs, because he said that most people wouldn't be capable of understanding it. But they don't really understand the problems. You say God is, what's wrong with God is physical? They don't understand the problems that are involved, why it can't be that way. But since they don't have any knowledge, know why it can't be that way, so they can't explain to them the proofs, but at least the conclusions they should know. Okay, now it says, therefore, in the Akdamah of the Chibur Mishnayis, we explain certain fundamental principles about Nevuah, and also certain fundamental principles about Torah Shebaal Peh. And certain things which every Rav, every person who considers himself a leader among the Jews, should definitely know about Torah Shebaal Peh. You told me he's writing that in English, right? He's what I was referring to. See, in the beginning, the Hagdama to Rambam and Pirshu Mishnayis, the Hagdama to Mishnayis, he writes the basic fundamental principles of Torah Shebaal Peh. What Torah is, what's Torah Shebaal Ksav, how does it was Torah Shebaal Peh. What's the whole basis of the Torah? How do we know that that the Gemara is right? I mean, what basis is there for the whole Gemara? Same people don't know this. They go to learn learn Gemara and Tesis and everything, but they don't know the basics of what the Torah is all about. Somebody asks them, how do you know how was the Torah given? Was the Torah given in one? Was it given with Torah Shabbat? Was it not? When was it? How did the whole thing work? What is it, the Sefer? What's a Mechota? What's this? What, they don't know. This is ridiculous. A person who's studying a subject must know what the basic fundamentals are. Says that's why before the Mishnayis, in the Hakdama instruction, he wrote down all the fundamental principles. Okay? Now it's like this. And also in Perek Chelek, he says, I explain the fundamental principles that are tied in with Olam Haba, with the concept of Olam Haba. Okay, and when I also did this in Mishnah Torah as well. Alright, nicely this. And then he mentions about Mishnah Torah. There's a Mishnah Torah something who only people who really know the truth, people who really have knowledge and are perfected, can really see. You really see what he means in Mishnah Torah. Really understand what he means. He says, and really see how he put together the things from Shas, from all over Shas, and I grouped them together and categorized them. Because when you categorize them, it's a whole art, a tremendous, an intricate art of how the Rambam categorizes. When it categorizes based on fundamental principles, why this halacha is next to this halacha, and the whole setup of it. So the only person who's very deep and really understands will know what he did in the Mishnah Torah. He says, and our purpose was that these people who are considered Talmid Chacham Magonim, or whatever you want to call them, he says they should know the Prate Hadin, and they should know every din, how it's related to the fundamental rule. In other words, there's a basic rule, and then from the rule you have details. But people just know the details many times, they don't see how it's related to the fundamental principle, how it follows naturally from the principle. You understand what I mean? Like they know a little halacha over here, a little halacha over there, but they don't know the foundation from which it comes. You understand what I mean? Like you ask a person, you have to be tovel a pyrex dish. And yes, and no, and I heard this one of my says you don't have to, but they don't know the basic halacha. What's the basic problem? Basic problem is whether it's klei cheres or not. Klei cheres doesn't need it. Doesn't need filo. You see? They don't know the fundamentals. People just know a detail here, a detail there. They don't know what kitzur are. They don't understand what the fundamental principles are. So the Ram says he wrote his chibur in a way that the person will see the details in relationship to the fundamentals. You see, to the basic principles. And therefore, the Torah will be sedura b'pihem. What does it mean sedura? It'll be organized. They have the basic rule, and from this rule, you have one principle. From this principle follows six halachas. See? That's the whole way he organized the Yadach and Sotah. Alright, now I feel like this. And all this, and all the halachas themselves are built upon what? Are built upon fundamental principles of emunah. Fundamental religious principles of the das. And therefore he organized it all after the Hilchos Yisod HaTorah. That's the first one. Why? Because he starts off with the basics. You see, he goes from the basics, from the large categories, he moves into the small categories. So the first foundation of the whole Torah is the Hilchos Yisod HaTorah. So he starts off with that. And then he goes into the details. He says, why did he do this? He says, because the person should not throw away the Yediyas Hashem, the knowledge of God, and just learn the halachos and not learn philosophy. By philosophy, I mean Yediyas Hashem. He says because their main desire should be to know God. That should be the main thing. Because that's the Yisodus. He says the person should spend time with those things that are really most important, and the most important things are knowledge of God, which are the Yisodi Adas. He says, but many people only want to spend time with things that can make them great in the eyes of the masses. So that's why they'll spend time with a lot of midrashim and things without spending any time in understanding the Yisodus. And the Yisodus is the thing which makes a person close to God, because that's when he really recognizes and understands God. As I said, Yisodus is the most important. Okay, that's his introduction. Now he says like this. He says, and one of the things that we mentioned was Olam Haba. Olam Haba. In other words, what the Rambam is saying is that people, they spend, like we spend time over here studying about Olam Haba, right? In the Rambam's Cheder. Now people who don't do that, he says, are very foolish. Because the whole basic, what's the purpose of a person's life? One of the essential purpose is Olam Haba, right? Now he doesn't know what he's doing, he doesn't know what he's learning for. Isn't that foolish that a person spends his whole life doing the activity of learning and not understand what he's learning for, why he's learning? It's nonsensical. What makes a person want to learn? What draws him to Torah? When he sees what the purpose of the learning is. Right. No, not the lollipop, but well, let's just say that's wrong, the lollipop. That's not really what I think. No, that's not true. The kid who... Lollipop is the knowledge itself. Not there's another lollipop, and this isn't good. Okay? This is the lollipop. This is the good thing. But if every person does something because of the good, what is a person? Even if he does it for lollipop, but he does it because he wants the good, right? So if a person wants the good, he has to know how the learning is tied into the good. And if he doesn't know this, so he's living a foolish existence. That's what the Rambam stresses the Yisodei HaTorah. That's why it's so important to the Rambam that a person should learn these things. Unfortunately, in Yeshivas today, they always still don't do it many times. And it's wrong. They should do it. Okay. What? The chibur. One of the things, something you mentioned. Talmidim, for instance, are so confused. They come and they say, how does the Gemara make all these drushes? A ba and a boo and a bow, and this means this and that means that, you know, because of the extra vav, so that's how I learned this out, because of that. All these things, what do they mean? The Rambam explains in the beginning of the Hagdama to the Pirush Mishnayos what it means. For instance, the Gemara says, how do you know what a lulav is? How do you know what an esrog is? I mentioned this many times. Mm-hmm. How do you know all these things? So the Gemara learns it out from Pesukim.
How do you know?
So the Gemara learns it from Pesukim. Right. He says, nobody can figure it out from the Pasuk. Moreover, Chazal themselves didn't figure it out from the Pasuk. I mean, they never knew what a lulav was. They never knew what an esrog was until they sat down and learned the Pasuk and figured it out. It's absurdity.
Yeah,
he says they knew because they knew from the Bez Dinashal Shmuller or Masi down to Bez Dinashal Yoshua Ben Nun straight down to Bez Dinashal Marsh from year to year they knew what a lulav and esrog is. But the Torah is written in such a way that what's called Chochmas HaKosov, I told you before, it's written in such a way that there's always an allusion to the Torah Shebal Peh in the Torah Shebiksav. There's an allusion there. And that's called Chochmas HaKosov. And the Gemara asked where the allusion is. You understand what I mean? It's an indication, a hint to the Torah Shebal Peh. But not that it's derived from there. But when they teach Gemara, they make the Talmud think that it's actually derived, that one mandama came, that a Tana took a pasuk, he opened it up and he started to make these drushes and figure out things. That's not true, that's not the way it works. The machlokes is in Svara, always in Svara, and then there's a question of how the illusion the Torah Shebiksav fits in. But people don't know this. Talmidim are taught that this is that every one of these things is derived in it, and it doesn't make any sense to them. It doesn't make any sense. They don't understand it. Never explains the basic principle. You see? So that's the that's an example of Because I explain what I meant in the parakhila, that we made our shiasinu matarasenu biur olam haba bilade chesam esam. Our objective there was olam haba, not chesam esam. You see, and we said that we don't see people. Or the only thing we see is people discussing chesam esam. He says they want to know, will they arise? Will the dead arise with clothes or without clothes? And all types of questions, shadows about that. Yeah. Right. But Olam Haba, that they don't discuss. He says, and also we explained over there that Chias HaMesim is one of the Yesodas of the Torah. But it's not the ultimate goal of life. It's not the purpose of life. It's one of the... There is... Chias HaMesim is a Yesod in the Torah. It's something which is a Yesod, something which is a principle of the Torah that it's true, that it is so. But it's not the ultimate aim of life. The ultimate aim of life is not Chias HaMesim. The ultimate aim of life is Olam Haba. Right. The Tachlis HaSof is the Olam Haba. And all this we did in order to explain the great difficulty that people think, in regard to the fact that people think that the only good in Torah is Olam Haba. And there's no other good in Torah. And the Rambam, we saw, went through, the Rambam explains that the good is Torah itself, not just Olam Haba. Olam Haba is just a natural result from living the good life. If you live the good life, then naturally have Olam Haba. But not that the whole purpose of Olam Haba and what you're doing is just painful. Okay. Therefore, it's like this. The whole purpose of life is Olam Haba, and the worst thing is not to have Olam Haba. Alright. And he says, and I also explained it in Hilchos Tshuva. Now, in Chelek, he says, we explained over there, as anyone who looks into it can see, when we finished about Olam Haba, we said that Chias HaMesim is one of the Yesodos of the Torah. He says, a person who does not accept Chias HaMesim has nothing to do, has no Shaychus to Torah's Moshe. If a person does not accept it, then he has no connection to Torah's Moshe, because it's one of the fundamental principles of the Torah itself. He says, and even though it's not the ultimate aim, even though it's not the ultimate aim, and here we're going to have to understand what the whole business of Chias HaMesim is, but the ultimate aim is Olam Haba. But Chias HaMesim is a fundamental principle in the Torah itself. So therefore, if you deny Chias HaMesim, you deny the whole Torah.
But
okay, yeah.
But you don't need Chias
HaMesim to keep clear. One is what the goal of life is. That's Olam Haba, the purpose of life. You see. When we say Olam Haba, we don't mean Olam Haba the way the Rambam explained it. You understand what I mean? I don't want to use terms. Okay. But he says, in the Torah itself, one of the fundamental principles is that there is such a thing as Chias HaMesim. And if you deny that, then you're denying the entire Torah. We have to see why that is. But nevertheless, Chias HaMesim isn't the goal of life. The goal of life is Olam Haba. But if you deny Chias HaMesim, you're denying one of the foundations of the Torah, one of the basic principles of the Torah. Now, right now, that's a little vague. what it means. I mean, if it's not the ultimate goal, so why is it a basic? You know what I mean? And if it's a basic, it should be the ultimate, should be tied into the ultimate goal somehow, right? At this point, that's vague. Let's leave that. Let's leave it vague temporarily until we go into what Chesed Mesim is, and then we'll have to come back and see exactly what it is, how it works. See? What does it mean? It's a fundamental principle, and yet it's not the ultimate goal. The Rambam distinguishes between a fundamental principle and between the goal of life. The goal of life is Olam Haba, but a fundamental principle of the Torah is Chesed Mesim. Okay? Now he says like this. He says, and also in the Chibur, in the Yad HaChazak, we mentioned that a person who does not accept Chesed Mesim has no part, has no chelek in Olam Haba, if he denies Chesed Mesim. He has no chelek in Olam Haba. And we said, we summed them up, we said that there's 24 people who do Emet Olam Haba. Right. Because... Right. Well, we mentioned a number. Why? Specifically, a number. Why? Because I was afraid that maybe one of the people who print the Sefer, Yad HaChazaka, will leave out here, one of them. So that's why I enumerated 24 to make sure that the printer
can't...
That
was done until the time, maybe now.
No, 24 people don't have a Chavon HaHor, 24 principles.
Oh.
Yeah. 24 people will consider that because of the Chavon HaHor. Okay. Now, and one of the 24 that we mentioned was a person who denies Chesed Mesim. But I said, I openly mentioned number 24, so in case the printer leaves one out, you'll see that it's a mistake right away, because it sees now 24. Mm-hmm. Right? Okay. Now, he says... When we mentioned Olam Haba, we said that this is the ultimate goal,
right?
And we said that this is the schar, that this is the greatest schar of all. Okay. And we also explained. Hold on. All right. Now we continue. Be'anuot Shem, the Rambam says, we explained there ki Olam Haba Imbo Metzias Gufos. He's explaining now. The Rambam is giving a little capitulation on what we just did about Olam Haba. So we explain that in the Olam Haba there are no physical forms, no physical bodies. Because Chazal said there's no eating, there's no drinking, and there's no sexual intercourse. He says, so how does that prove that there's no physical form? He says, how does that prove there's no physical form? So what? So what if there's no eating and no drinking? So what? So he says it's impossible that there should be a body when it doesn't function. This is the Rambam's premise. One of the big premises of the Rambam. Big premise of the Rambam is, and it was a premise of the philosophers too, premise of Yadis, is that God does not perform malachas avtala. Malachas avtala means actions for nothing. So therefore, if the functions of the body ceases, then the body would cease to continue too. The body only exists as long as the functions of the body continue. That's why the Rambam says that that the Olam Haba, the greatest good, is without the body. The greatest good is without the body. The Ramban wants to say that eventually the people exist forever with their body, physically. He has a problem with this part of Ram. Okay. Ram mentions in the Maran, he says that the Olah, because it covers, the orgasm takes place in the head of the penis, you see? And when it's left without a cover, so it becomes of course, you know, it loses sensitivity. And when it's covered, on the contrary, when it's covered, there's greater sexual satisfaction. He said, but the Torah says God told us to remove the Arla precisely for that reason. That man should not be, it's a simon, it's part of the philosophy of Yad, that man should not be indulge in sexual intercourse to the height of the pleasure. That's the concept of bris milah. That's what the Rambam says. Interesting thing. It is true that the head of the penis becomes desensitized after milah.
It does lose. Physiologically,
that it's of a health hazard. By the way, no, both ways. It's a funny thing. The Machlokes, the Rambam and the Ramban. The Ramban says no. The Ramban says that the guf is perfected by the by removal of the arla, and the arla is an imperfection. You see, the Rambam says on the contrary. Says nature is never imperfect. that nature is not imperfect, and therefore the arla really is the best way. But the removal does reduce the amount of sexual satisfaction. This they say is true. It is true, because the orgasm takes place in the head of the penis. So once it's desensitized, it can't be as sharp, as
But it is also true that health hazards, both, it's a funny thing, the Ramban was also right. The science today, I mean, corroborates both views. It's funny, corroborates both views, because in a way, it is an improvement. There's less cancer in the penis, I think it's practically none with the circumcision.
The problem says that nature is perfect, how do you count all these?
Crippled and deformed, it means, you see, there's two things. There's the general scheme of nature, and then there's the particulars that take place in nature. Of course there's deformation in nature also. This means that nature has not been able to achieve 100% accuracy in its plan, you see. That's true. That's because of the fact that the physical world is never perfect. There's always some imperfection. You know what I mean? Like you have an animal walks by a radioactive spot and the mutations will destroy the genes. I mean, this is physical. You have all these different forces, conflicting forces, which do result in having deformations. But, however, in general, nature is perfect. Which means if you see an organ in the human body, and it's found in most people, you should know that organ has a purpose. In individual cases, you wouldn't have that. It might not have the organ. That's a defect in nature. But the basic plan is the most perfect plan.
How do you count the
tonsils? They say definitely it prevents infection, and even the appendix. They say now is a
very hesitant to take out tonsils.
Yeah, sure.
Repeated
tonsillectomy. That's right. Now it's just the opposite. I remember when I was a kid, they used to every kid in the class used to go through it. Had a tonsil, except me, because my mother she helped me around.
But Marcus
still have right. But there was a certain time when there was that's affection. Shema yodam sheyesh lo apeva me'ayim v'akovei l'shor klei ha'mozim v'lien in izun v'lo klei ha'mishgo v'lien in mazriya rei tinsa mitziyasin l'vatel ha'bechwet. If you're going to say that the man is going to be there with his sensory organs and he can't use them, of course it's going to be for nothing. And this is God does not perform l'chad ha'tel ha'vein roi lo havi neged margol yaseinu eile sheyesh leim raya sichlios es pashtei hadrashos for uyum lei omer lefnei ha'noshim b'veisa oivel. He says it's not befitting to bring disproofs to what I'm saying, which is a logical, which makes sense and it logically holds true, to try to bring chazal, or the plain pshat from certain midrashim, which are fit to be said in front of women at a funeral. In other words, it's degrading. He says, people will bring different midrashim against what I'm saying, because certain midrashim might say on the surface that it contradicts this principle. However, he says this type of approach is like a nonsensical approach. He says you have to follow what logic tells you. If logic and reason tells you something is so, then that is so. The Medrash, you cannot take at face value. That's the Rambam sheet straight through. I mean, this is the Rambam explained to it many, many times. He always has a problem with that because people like to assume the Medrash is plain shot. That was one of his biggest arguments. Somebody questioned what he said. Why he said like this? He said, "Hinei Moshe, v'hinei Eliyahu, Moshe Rabbeinu and Eliyahu Navi. Nisharu zman mesuyim, they remain for a specific time, b'li achilu shsiya, without eating or drinking. Good kasher. V'hem gufim, and they were physical. Kach yiyu b'nei olam haba." And Chazal said there's no eating and there's no drinking and there's no sexuality. Chazal don't just mean that. It means there's no physical life altogether. They just use these as examples. Lo aleichem kol over dera habitu ruth expression. Lo shivel liyol leim hashalom avarehim eila einim levatala. Their limbs, their bodies, their physical being is not levatala. Not for nothing. Why? The fishahim shnei anoshim ibnei olam hazeh. Because they are two people from this world. Achlu b'hem, they ate with their physical organs. V'shasu lifnei hanes ulacharav. They ate and drank before the miracle and after the miracle. V'heyach yeshu mizeh. How could you do? How could you learn from this? The Metzias Hatzmidus for a steady, permanent situation. Asha'ein l'sof, k'mo shomer l'olam shekulo tov, l'olam shekulo oroch. Because olam haba is referred to as an eternal situation. Right? V'yach yi bo evre aguf l'vatala. However you answer.
Yeah.
In other words, it doesn't mean... That's one answer. In other words, it doesn't mean that you have to eat every minute. I mean, I'm not eating right now. So what does that mean? Is my tongue supposed to fall out? Ridiculous. I will eat tomorrow morning. Right? I will eat tomorrow morning. Same thing with Moshe. 40 days he didn't eat. Right? Fine, but on the 41st day he came down and had breakfast. Right? So therefore he needed it. The answer is like this. The answer is the design in nature is not for nothing. Moshe Rabbeinu and Eliyahu HaNavi were normal people, and people as a group require these sensory organs. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, since he was a person, nature dictates that a person must eat and a person must have these organs, you see? However, if a nes comes along for a particular individual and God sustains a person without food, this doesn't mean he has to immediately lose all his physical body.
He's getting a nutrition. Hashem is giving him nutrition.
You see, the reason why he needs the body is for the normal, is because nature designs. You see, the design of nature is, it's a rational design. The body's worked out like a machine. You study the body, you see that the whole system is worked out in a logical way, that everything works together, and everything serves the purpose of bringing about a state of health, right? So therefore, if we should take an individual and God should sustain him temporarily, there's no reason why he has to lose his body. His body has a purpose.
He's still in nature's design.
Right. Insofar as he's human, he's part of the species requires these organs, and he is part of the species, so he has to have these organs. Right now, God defines that he doesn't need it right now. Right? Fine. But the fact remains that it makes sense that he has these organs. He's an ace. But here you're going to tell me that God is going to create a situation, a permanent situation, where he's going to give people bodies and they'll never use them. This means absurdity in the realm of nature's design. That the Rambam says is ridiculous. You understand what I mean? The design of nature can't be left off. It doesn't mean that every little thing has to have a purpose. Of course there are things in the world. You find, you take a leaf off a tree. I mean, if the whole world changes, this one leaf wasn't here. It's ridiculous. What difference does it make? It doesn't make a difference whether that one leaf is here or not. But the point is, if you study leaves in general, you'll find there's a purpose for having trees in the world. There's an ecological purpose. Because leaves supply oxygen and it's part of the ecological balance, and there's a reason for it. Of course, you can't say every this leaf, or this little leaf over here, take it off, and change the world. Of course it wouldn't. But in general, there's a design. There's a general design. But here we're saying there's no general design. You're saying that God creates a world in which there's no physical use of the body, and he creates a body. That's an absurdity. You understand what I mean? The universals can't be absurd. Particular situation that could happen that a person does not need. I mean, let's say a person will take intravenous. Does his body's going to fall apart? It's ridiculous, because nature was designed in such a way that he really should eat in the normal manner. But if he eats another way, it's not going to. There's a purpose for his organs. He's not using it, but there's still a purpose for it. See? Mashiach came in a permanent situation. You're telling me that nature's creating something that has no purpose. That's what a Rambam means. See, the Ram doesn't really mean because they used it before and after. Using before and after is only showing an illustration that they were part of the human species, and therefore they used it before and they used it after. You see? But since the species requires it, as a species they have to have it. So what if there's a nest temporarily, God suspends their physical function? That's a nest. It's a nest. But there's a purpose for them to have a body. Not on an individual basis, on a universal basis.
Doing that 40 days, the purpose of that body?
You don't understand. It is well known, ki aguf biklaluso eino ela klei lenechesh. Lasos al yado kol apulos asha ein af pu'ula achas mehem mitzuya levnei olam haba. He says, we know that the body is only here in order to do certain activities. And none of these activities take place in olam haba. So therefore, of course, it's absurd. It says something like this. Ve'ela einam yodim otzem hazoros ha-mishayevis l'misha min siyachit l'ashem pu'ula levatala. He says, the people who don't understand this philosophy have no concept of how impossible it is to ascribe to God actions for no reason at all. And that God should create organs that have a purpose and never they will never use the purpose. He says, these people, the average person, isn't advanced enough in philosophy to know how stupid it is to make such an assertion. The only reason that people even thought of this possibility is because people have big imaginations. Okay, so he says, what brought people to this idea that the people, you have to have body in Olam Haba? He says, because the average person is not advanced enough to recognize the reality of the non-physical. He says, to them, the only reality they recognize is something that's physical. So therefore, Olam Haba is supposed to be a great thing, right? Now they can't imagine that a thing is going to be great and that they have no body, because their imagination leads them to the conclusion that the only things that are real in this world are the physical. And anything that's not physical is not real. He says, but a person who has advanced in knowledge knows that there are other things that exist that are non-physical and that are real. Like, for instance, ideas. We mentioned many times the proof of the soul is based on the fact that ideas do exist, and yet they're of a different nature. And a person who lives in the world of ideas recognizes the reality of ideas. But the average person lives in the world of the physical, and to him the only thing that's real is the physical. So the moment he thinks about an existence that's going to be eternal, he has to think of a body. He thinks of a Superman, a super strong body, that will be able to stand up to time. Because to him, the only thing that's physical, the only thing that exists is physical. And that's how it is. But in reality, a person who is advanced in learning and knowledge understands that, on the contrary, the physical is inherently weak, because the physical is subject to decay and subject to change. And an idea has more reality than the physical, because it isn't subject to time, it isn't subject to change. God, who is the reality of all realities, is non-physical at all, and his existence is eternal. So that here, the problem is as follows. The problem is that man has a mind, but the mind initially gets all its information from the senses. And since it does, many people remain on the sense level. And to them, the only thing that's real is the senses. Anything that's outside the senses isn't real. I'll give you an example. For instance, when radiation was first discovered, so the Curies, so what he did was, he put it in his pocket in a tin can, and it burnt the hole, radiation burn, in his foot. And they say that there's no doubt he wouldn't have lived too long, because of the fall, the radiation poisoning. But he got killed with by a horse and carriage as he walked across the street. But even after that, people noticed that those who fool around with radiation die. And they noticed strange things happening. And it was a known fact. Doctors knew of the dangers of radiation, and yet all over the country no one cared about it. It was the most amazing phenomenon. And this is a fact. For years, they just didn't care. They just refused to believe that it could harm you. They used to have the machines. I remember when I was a kid, they used to have the machines in the shoe stores. Anybody remember that?
You put
your feet under the thing, you know, and you take a look and you see your bones. See that line of your bones? That was like taking a few hundred x-rays, one time. Because it's constant flow of radiation. And a lot of those machines...
Was that like a pinball machine for humans?
That was like a machine. People really just rejected the danger. They won't accept the danger. It's a simple reason, right?
They can't see it, they don't believe it.
Exactly. Can't see it, they don't believe it. Because it's within the nature of man to believe a thing is real. If somebody comes and hits you with a sledgehammer, that's real. You see? But this, fall out, yeah, where? You can't see it, it's flying around, doesn't hurt. Painless.
People are...
Logical, they're sensible. They go by the senses. You understand what I mean? They follow the senses. So if the senses, it's painful, and it hurts, that's bad. But if it's not painful, painless, they can know logically it's going to harm them, but they can avoid the reality. They can close off the reality. That's what the Rambam says. That's why people
like
are...
Like a baby with five.
That's why they think God is physical too. Because to them, the only reality is the physical. Because non-physical doesn't exist. Not physical, doesn't exist. Because they believe if there's no body, there's nothing. How can you tell me I'm going to exist? How can you tell me you can exist without a body? To them, existence and body is the same thing. I went through this many times. I showed you why it is. Because you can always see the breakdown. You can see life, and you can see body. Matter without life. So you see a breakdown. So you see matter, then you see matter with life. Now, you could break down into two categories. There's life, which has matter, and then there's matter without life, right? But matter has existence. Now take one more step. There's existence without matter. Just like you have life and body, right? And then you have body without life. So you have body and existence, so you should have existence without body, and you do. But that next step people can't take. Why can't they take the next step? Because the senses don't corroborate it. people can only take, can only make a breakdown as the sense is corroborated. The next step, existence without body, that's God, existence without body. But people can't make that step because they never saw it. And why can't they see it? Because it's impossible to see it. You understand what I mean? See, God can demonstrate to you life with body and body without life because it's physical. But can God demonstrate existence without body? He can't, because that means there's no body, there's nothing to demonstrate. And that's why people feel that God is unreal. Why do they think that God is unreal? Because to them, reality is only through the senses. And even though they can see the logical breakdown that there should be existence without body, just like there's body without life, they can't feel it. The senses don't corroborate it. They have a funny feeling that God is... That's why it's very hard to prove God. Why is it hard to prove God? Not because of logical arguments. Not the logic. You can show there are many logical arguments in you. But the point is, the person walks away with an unreal feeling. And that's just from the emotion, because he, to him, the only thing that's real is the physical. And it's not a logical deduction. It's an emotional conviction. But a person who gains knowledge and lives in the world of ideas, to him the ideas are more real than the physical. That's why to him God is a reality. To Moshe Rabbeinu, God was the greatest reality. Because on the contrary, the physical really is corrupt. The physical is subject to decay and change and destruction. But the ideational, the abstract, the non-physical is the real reality. But you have to be on a certain level to be able to understand that.
Well, that just goes back to the
language. The Torah, the most basic issue in the whole Torah, the worst thing in the Torah is Avodah Zarah. What is Avodah Zarah? What is Avodah Zarah? Avodah Zarah doesn't necessarily mean strange gods, other gods. The Torah says, God says, don't make with me, don't make any images of me. Why? Because Yahweh demands of every Jew one thing. Every Jew has to have a certain basic ability of being abstract. Namely, that there's an existence which I cannot perceive through my senses, but which I can only perceive through another dimension. And the moment you have a Avodah Zarah, what does it mean? It means you're attempting to say I can perceive God through a physical form. Why is the necessity for all the Umos HaOlam besides the Jews to have an Avodah Zarah? No, don't forget about the Medrash. Don't explain the Medrash to you. Proof of God? That's for sure.
Proof
of God?
Want to interpret, but that's how it is.
No, it's the Torah. You find that there's an image of God. Proof of God. It's true God. It's true proof of God. Sure.
Where is it in the church?
In the church, we'll have Jesus. They have to have...
He's not God.
Proof of God. Father Kennedy. He's not a relative. More than a relative.
Joseph,
he wasn't there. He wasn't God.
Isn't he God?
No.
Who's
he? He's just nothing really.
He wasn't God.
He was nothing. But the point is, they have to have it. They have to have it. Why do they have to have it?
I've seen very similar situation where the child wins, like one of the learns and rewards him, and you build it up. So, couldn't you say somebody couldn't understand, God, there's no Iman, so you first start him out on a low level like that, then you can maybe build him up.
But the only thing I get. The reason why, I made a miscalculation, he thought incorrectly. But the point is, in Moshe Rabbeinu in general, even though...
But the point is that Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have done it if it was something that he
would have been killed for. He knew he could escape, and he would escape. It wasn't a necessary escape, he was able to escape. He could kill a mystery and...
Why was it there? He didn't make castles. The only reason was because they told him. Because Dr. Lavier was there, and they told him it wasn't for them, he didn't expect it.
That's what I said, okay, maybe they'll double. They said, what kind of people they are? I got to help them, and they go and report me.
It was not a fit of emotion.
You were saying it's a fit of emotion because that's the way you would act. You'd assume it's a fit of emotion. But it definitely wasn't a fit of emotion. It was a rational action. That was the right decision.
So you're saying he got the word from Hashem to
him? No, he got the word from Hashem. He saw logically this is the thing to do. If you can kill a mitzvah, if you have a man oppressing, let's say you have 1,000 oppressors. I don't care if you have 1,000,000 people oppressing others. But that's what I said, Achim and Adobe. Now I see why they're slaves. Because they themselves don't want to help themselves.
God helps those who help themselves.
That's it. Paul Rabbit. Okay. Okay, V'chein kol nivra nifrad. Do this next time?
Yeah.
One thing?
Yeah.
Okay. He has a little bit, he has two more to go until he starts on Tchias HaMikdash himself. He's preparing us for it. Okay. The Rambam says, the last point of Rambam was that people always think that those things which are physical are more real. Are more real. In other words, because of the fact that man basically starts off with the physical and then he goes to the ideas, that's what has been done. But the truth of the matter is that the physical is the least real. Why is the physical the least real? Because it's subject to decay and distortion. Whereas the non-physical is not subject to decay and distortion. An idea isn't subject to decay and distortion. Because an idea is non-physical. You can't distort an idea. Because when we say an idea, we say that there are, that ideas exist. As I mentioned earlier. When we say that there are ideas, it means like this. It means when I think of an idea, let's say the universe is operating on certain principles, right? Now these principles really exist. I don't make up the principles, they really exist. So the principles with which the universe operates exist and have a type of existence. I perceive them in my mind, but really they exist.
It can be changed.
Can't be changed.
An idea?
No, an idea can't be. A true idea. So the idea didn't change, this was a false idea.
Because
it's an opinion.
Yes,
right,
that's
the thing.
False idea.
False idea, correct. Oh, no, yeah, but there's a difference. A false idea doesn't exist. The only thing that exists is a true idea. And so when you study, let's say for instance, you study any science, you're going to find certain principles upon which the science works, it operates, right? Now, those principles are real, and your mind can perceive those principles. Therefore, these principles exist. They have a certain type of existence, a defined type of existence, because we can't feel them, we can't sense them, but they do exist, right? Now, the existence of those ideas is more real than the existence of the physical, because they're not subject to change. They can't decay, they can't change. They are the real existences. They're the real existences that do not change. And the physical changes. Like let's say, for instance, you have an idea about the way you have certain ideas about the way an amoeba functions. You find out the principles under which it functions, right? Now these principles won't change, the given amoeba might die. The next amoeba. Right, that's right. When you say idea, you have to be careful what you mean. When the philosophers talk of ideas, they don't mean an idea, you're right, they don't mean the term the way we use the term idea. That's a good point. They don't mean idea like just any idea. They mean the principles upon which the given things operate. You see? The way the principles of the universe and so on. Now the principles of the universe could concern a particular star. The particular star can die, but the principles will be true for another star. You see? So the principles don't change. The objects which abide by those principles change. But the principles don't change. That's why the philosophers say that the real world is a world of ideas, because those worlds, that's the never-changing world, the true world. And that's why we say that the soul is eternal. Why? Because it says the soul has a part in this world of ideas. And therefore the soul can exist eternally. Because the soul also, since it has a part and understands these ideas, the soul also will be able to has an eternal existence. It must be of the same nature in order to perceive these ideas. Okay? So that's why Yadus maintains, and I mentioned this last time, that the whole of Yadus is basically the most essential thing in Yadus is anti-Avodah Zarah, right? Anti-Avodah Zarah, right? Now why anti-Avodah Zarah? Why? Because Avodah Zarah maintains that the way we perceive God is through the physical. But Yadus says no, perception of God must involve the idea that there is another being who cannot be perceived through the physical, only through the intellectual. And that's why there can't be any physical object which should represent them. Because that means you're trying to reach God through the physical. Even if it's a physical object of God, like the eagle. The eagle was that mistake. What was the mistake of the eagle? They said, Eila lekecha yisosh yisosh yisosh. They said they wanted to make a physical representation. Right? So the physical representation of God. It wasn't a new God. They wanted this to represent God. But that was a terrible case. Because then you are reducing man to the level of only the physical. And you're maintaining that you can perceive God through the physical, which is false. God's reality is a non-physical reality. Just like the closest thing that we could have to approximate to it is the principle. See? And that's the closest approximation to make that. But people who are involved in the principles and really live the life of ideas, to them ideas are real. To them an idea is as real as the physical. But the average person just spends his life in the physical. So to him, he has a certain odd feeling about an idea. Like, it's not really real, because to him, the real is only the physical. So therefore, the Rambam says, people made a mistake into making Gan Eden into the physical. Why? Because they said like this, Gan Eden is a good thing, right? And it's good, it has to be real. And it has to be real, it has to be physical. That was a mistake. But that's because they were uneducated. You understand what I mean? They really didn't know they really weren't acquainted with the true world. But those people who have reached the level where they live in the world of ideas, to them, on the contrary, the physical is something, the person's physical being changes, he gets older, he eventually lives away, he dies, and the physical is not permanent at all. It's a weak, very weak type of substance. The only thing is that people have the ability to fool themselves into thinking that they look for something that's not changing. They want to think they're not going to change. They try different health measures and different ways to keep themselves young, but the truth of the matter is they can't, because age moves on and the physical changes and the body gets corrupted and weak and finally falls apart. It's the case, right? Yeah.
What is the truth of the theory?
Exactly. That's the way it is. Because how do we perceive God? Through nature. Why? Because nature is the handiwork of God. So therefore, when we see the principles upon which nature is built and we understand how it works, when we say through nature, it means through understanding the principles of nature.
So you could, some people could also view it through the physical aspect. Yes. Seeing the tree as a physical.
That's a medrash. That's a medrash. And there's an interesting, there's a beautiful medrash in that. A well-known medrash and a medrash that is often misinterpreted. The medrash is like this. Pirkei Avos says, if a person is traveling with a friend, and the friend is learning, and he says to his friend, how beautiful is this tree? Right? What does the Pirkei Avos say?
Because the friend's involved in the spiritual, he's involved in the physical.
See? But in other words, if you're traveling with your friend, right, and your friend's learning Torah, and then you say to him, look how nice that tree is, Messiah Benasha, as if you killed him. So why does the Medrash say that? Why does the Medrash say simply? If your friend is learning, you stop him from learning, Messiah Benasha. Why does it have to give the illustration of where you tell him how beautiful this tree is? What's the answer?
Because his friend really doesn't need to be told.
This is obvious. This is too obvious to say. Stop guys from learning, so then the Messiah of Nasher. Everybody knows it. But there's something else over here. Even if you tell him Manoah Ilan Zeh, what is Manoah Ilan Zeh? It's also a level. At least, even from walking through, a person walks through the woods and appreciates nature and he thinks about God, that's also a level. Okay? But that level is not as great as what? As understanding the principle, understanding the ideas. Because the true beauty is the Chachma of God. That's the real beauty. The physical beauty is something which brings a person closer to God, but the real beauty is in Chachma. So therefore, if your friend is in the real world of Chachma, and you take him down one notch to the other, even though that's also something, it's not nothing, it's also something, because like he said, there's brachas, when a person sees the mountains, makes a bracha, you see the oceans, and you see the ocean 30 days, and you see, you make a bracha, that's also something. But that is not as great as what? As seeing God through the idea. So that's why
it's
a Messiah ben Asher. Even a person can appreciate the Chachma, then he should. That's right, definitely.
Yeah.
Then he should go on the other level. You see, but the Medrash is telling us, Pirkei Avos is telling us that even if you don't take him away completely, but just partially, you see, that's also wrong. That's also Messiah ben Asher. Okay. Now this is the first religion, the only religion to maintain that the real is the immaterial. The real is the immaterial. There's two things. A particular idea, you can make a mistake if you have a false concept. You see? That's true. But we're talking about the way a person feels about ideas in general. Now, to a chacham, ideas are real, because he knows the principles as the underlying thing which upon which everything works. That's the cause for everything to work. The principles are the main thing. To a theoretician, of course you can make a mistake in a particular principle, but he knows that principles is the area you have to go with. If you make a mistake once, then you got to analyze the principles again. To him, the real world is the world of the principles, because that's the source from which everything operates.
Just like the machine.
Exactly right.
The key, but the idea
right.
of how to create it will
exactly.
always
Exactly. What makes the machine work? The principles involved in the machine. The principle of nature. Now, the one who's a theoretician, he knows that this is the area. As a matter of fact, the theoretician usually dislikes the practical. That's why a man like Einstein was tremendously theoretical. On the contrary, he despised the practical. and he would never have anything to do with the with producing the A-bomb by himself, because to the him he just knew, he just cared about the theory. Once he saw the idea, that was the end of it. He didn't care to bother with the practical. To him, the real thing is how it works. Once you saw how it works, it's all the rest. Work it out yourself. Big deal, you know. Big explosion, small explosion. You know, that's not the important thing. The important thing is the principles of nature that are involved. On the contrary, the physical man, the practical man, to him, the reality is the big bomb. Oh, look at that tremendous explosion. That's a man like Einstein on the court. Right. That's why you see that no other nation was able to do it besides the Jews. Because what is Christianity really? Take a look at Christianity. You see, what is the basic? Well, the Greeks were really physical. The Greeks were ultimately the body of the Hellenism. Gods were really, and the whole life was physical. That was the conflict between Hellenism and Judaism. Conflict of the physical against the immaterial, the non-material. Then, that's why when Alexander the Great went throughout the world, the only place he didn't see any of Avodah Zarah was in Judea. He couldn't believe it. He never saw a place like that. But what is Christianity? Christianity is an attempt to take Judaism and to place the egg of ourselves next to it. Why? Easier. Because they had to attach themselves to some man, to a human being, to a human form.
They had
Moshe. Why? Exactly. Just like by the end of that's the material. And they could never accept. There was an attempt to accept parts of Judaism, because the world at that time, when Christianity was first coming into being, the world was in a state where they recognized that paganism is foolish. And they needed a religion. They were looking for something. Many of them became Jews. It's a tremendous time when a lot of people were converting at that time. But in Christianity, the intent, of course, mitzvah was delightful thing to people, something that would attract people, because mitzvah is very difficult. Okay? So that was always something that was distasteful. Understand? So mitzvahs they got rid of. But even in the philosophy, they couldn't take it straight. Why? Because they could not accept the idea of believing in a God that is completely immaterial. There's nothing there, absolutely nothing physical there. You see? So what did they have to do? They had to take a man. They had to take a human being. A human being whom they could imagine in their mind, burn the image of this person in their mind, and then attach their emotions to that person. You see? What is Christianity? It's nothing more than glorified paganism. I mean, it's on a higher level. Instead of having a statue, which is completely nothing, so you believe in a person. A person is a little higher. I mean, a person is higher than the 6 foot stone. But basically, they had to have the physical object with which they could attach their emotions. That was the Chedei Lazar. But the Egel Azar, Klal Yisrael was able to pull themselves out of. But no other Umo was able to pull themselves out of the instinct in man to recognize only the physical, which is the basic premise against which Yadus built up the Torah Shita. The remarkable thing, that's why when Chazal say that the Jews in the Midbar were on a very high level, Dardea, you can see why. Because there is no other Ummah that was able to make the change, even through generations and generations. And here, Klal Yisrael did it in 49 days. In 49 days. An unbelievable step from Egypt to the totally
non-material.
Was that in that generation was easier for them to perceive God on a non-material basis. Why? Because they could see the actions of God. Right? Yeah, they could see the actions of God. But today it's more difficult, because today you don't really see directly the actions of God. Correct? Yeah. Good point. Even after Makkas Becharis, they came out to kill him. You missed the Makkas Becharis. So you see very well that the Egyptians was not a stupid nation. Egypt was the center of civilization at the time. It wasn't a stupid nation. And yet they weren't able to pull themselves up. They weren't able to do it. On the contrary, they went against it and they denied it and they killed themselves over it. Huh? So you certainly see, one thing you see, the uniqueness of Klal Yisrael at the time. There's no question about that. Your question is it harder now? Is it more difficult now? than it was then. That's a good argument. It could be. It could be. The only thing I say is this, that we have to weigh two different factors over here. Why? Because you see that it's possible. See, a lot of times a person says, if I was in that situation, I definitely would accept it. You know? You mustn't always believe people when they say that. You mustn't always believe people when they say that. Because a lot of times people say that merely as an excuse. Merely, right. Because they know they couldn't be there. But if you think that the mind can't rationalize away any event when it wants to, you're making a big mistake. Big mistake. Would I have gone after the idol? Well, it's a tough question to say, because you're putting, you know, it's a question, it's a hypothetical question. Hopefully not. Hopefully not. But one thing, before you go any further. You see? You have to understand, there's two things that make a person. One is the environment in which he's, in which he exists, right? But there's something else also that makes him, besides his initial makeup, and that is the way he's trained. The way he's trained. The first nation of Klal Yisrael, the first generation of Klal Yisrael was lacking in the training, because Chazal say they were in Egypt and they were in Memtes Shaarei Tumah. They needed something to pull them out of it. Okay? And this, Matan Torah did. But you have to realize that once the Torah was given, and the whole philosophy of life was given, and the next generation was raised on it, was fed and bred on it, to them it's much easier to recognize the non-physical, because they weren't raised in the same situation as their parents were. The parents who were raised in the physical situation needed to have the nissen. You see, in order to pull them out of what they were steeped in, because they were steeped in idolatry, yes, they were Israelites. But the next generation had an additional thing which that generation did not have. Namely, it was raised from early youth on the ideas of the Torah. So that when you take a child and you're raising and teaching him the immaterial, and teaching about God when he's 5 years old and you can't see God, and he's raised with the concept, and you show him Torah, you show him how ideas work, and you actually train him in the world of the non-physical, for him it's much easier. And apparently, HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt that there is no need for man to constantly have right. In order to equalize the Bechira. Because on the contrary, if you take a person and you keep hitting him with shock treatment again and again, miracles and miracles, then you remove the whole Bechira. The Bechira has to be in a certain way in which a person can make a choice. I'll give you an example. The Kash is asked, how could God make Pharaoh's heart hard. How do you do it? Because, right? Take away Bechir Chavshis, the old Kasher. Rav Yeshe Ber, Rabbi Soloveitchik's great-grandfather, he also called Yeshe Ber, he gave an ingenious answer. He said like this. He said, really, Paz didn't have any Bechir. Why? Because the miracles were so astonishing that he lost his Bechir. Any person that would see miracles like that would change, you see? But, in order to equalize, in order to make sure that he had Bechir, so therefore God gave him an emotional... You see, enough emotions, enough hardness to be able to withstand it, and he had the fear, on the contrary. The point is that if a person is bombarded with miracles constantly, then the fear is taken away. God has to do it in the way in which a person has the fear. And you'll notice the first generation did have the fear. First generation, there's the ten of Eris. Isaiah's upon him, I should say. Ten of Eris it did. But they had the fear, they had the ability, they had the free choice. However, if that generation wasn't raised on Yahadus, they had to absorb it themselves. And the first one, it was necessary that to have the miracles in order to produce, in order to engender this attitude, this mental attitude. And even with the miracles, other nations couldn't do it. You see, other nations couldn't do it, as you see clearly from Egypt. But for us, we don't need it, because we were raised on the ideas of Torah. And I'll give you an example. When you say if you see miracles also, that you definitely would accept it, is not necessarily true. Because people see in their lifetimes, many times you meet people that saw unusual things, if this would happen to me, I definitely believe. For a moment it catches them, then after a while they start rationalizing, right? They start rationalizing away. Yeah, it wouldn't happen anyway, you know. You know one thing, that all the nisim happened in the Mitzrayim, the real impact of the nest wasn't the nest itself. For instance, Arba, tremendous amount of grasshoppers came from. So what? What's unusual about that? The earth, unusual, never had so much before. But this alone would never have even been a miracle. The only reason there was a miracle was because of the prediction of Moshe. Because Moshe said it's going to happen tomorrow, and then he said take it away. The essence of the miracle in Egypt was not the phenomenon itself. Of course, it's a natural phenomenon.
Okay.
Of course, it's unusual. It's very unusual. Of course. When the water turned to blood, it means it had to taste the blood. It doesn't mean it's real blood. You couldn't take that and take a transfusion from that.
No, it wasn't real blood.
It was red like blood. Red like blood.
Red.
But it doesn't mean it's actual blood. And the redness could be from many sources. There's no question that God operates within the laws of nature. And there was some reason if we understood. If we understood how the physical phenomena work, we'd understand how it happened. But the point is, the essence of the miracle was not the thing itself, because the thing itself, they say, what is power going to say? So what? So suddenly strange things are happening in China. Does that mean I should send the Jews free? What's going to do with the Jews? Nothing. The proof was because Moshe came, he said, tomorrow is going to happen. And then he said, it's far away. You tell me when to get rid of it by the father. You tell me you want it tomorrow, be tomorrow. Next day, be the next day. The answer is, even and in spite of that, he was able to rationalize. You see? So that's what I want to point out. The fact is that a person can rationalize. Many times we have shown the proof of Torah Sinai, which is a proof that the Torah gives. And if you go through the proof, you'll see there's no escape out of the proof of Torah Sinai. It's a proof which is given at the time of Moshe, and it can be proven today with the same accuracy as it was in the time of Moshe. And many times I meet people and they say they'd like to hear the proof. And I ask them if they'll change their lives if they hear it, you know? Naturally they say yes. That's what they walk away, they rationalize away. People can rationalize anything. A medical doctor can tell you if you keep on eating this type of food, you're going to get a heart attack. Rationalize that away too. There's nothing that a person, almost nothing a human being can't rationalize away. So the point remains that no, even though they had the miracles to assist them, there's no question about that. But today, God saw fit that the Torah was given then and handed down from one generation to another, so that today it's not necessary to have miracles. Not necessary. But we're raised in a way that it was.
The other nations
couldn't accept the Torah?
Exactly.
Right. That's exactly right. That's what the matter says, that every nation couldn't do it. They simply were unable to live with that. As you see from the case of Christianity. It's a beautiful example. It says that God went to each nation and asked them if they could do it. What does it mean? It's not going to be taken literally. It means that no other nation was capable of it at the time. It's even later they weren't capable. Not true.
That
matter, you have to understand the matter. That was only later. In the beginning, first they accepted it. But then when they were under Har Sinai, they couldn't change their mind anymore. See? That was the... Once they accepted it already, then under Sinai, that was too late. But the first acceptance was willful. Willful, not finished, was before. Then under, when they were at the time of Sinai, that time they had no right to change their mind anymore. Made the attempt to accept the others. Pagans were failing. They wanted to accept just the philosophy of the others. But they could not do it without introducing a human figure. Something physical. Even today in the churches, they have to have the images and this. Why? Because they can't reach that level. That level they can't reach. And that level is the basis of the others. That's what Aram says, that the people must think of Gan Eden as a physical thing, because the physical is the only real thing. But to the Jew, it's not the physical that's real, but it's the ideational that's real. It's interesting that in the last generation, the Jewish scientists that broke through in different areas broke through precisely because they were completely abstract. And namely, in physics, Einstein, and in psychology, Sigmund Freud. Because both of them were accused of Jewish-type thinking. Einstein, of course, was accused of Jewish mathematics. That's right. If you read the early, they had press releases, the early press releases that came out, says Jewish mathematics is abstract, completely away from reality. The Nazis were against it because they said that's completely away from reality. That's not scientific. Yeah, Aryan is down to the practical. And Jewish is just the opposite. As a matter of fact, one of the great psychologists, Carl Gustav Jung, was hired by the Nazis to differentiate between Jewish psychology and Aryan psychology. And the Freudian psychology was immediately labeled as Jewish. Aside from the fact that it was the originator was Jewish, but because it was too abstract. Too abstract. And when it's too abstract, it's Jewish and it's not real. See? That's precisely they have the dichotomy between the two types of approach.
What kind of psychology did
Oh, that practice of behaviorists. Behaviorist is
they
very good.
That
yeah, 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 definitely. Because behaviorism is gestalt psychology. Behaviorism is something which you could see. It's a, you know, it's close to the close to the phenomena. It's good for the guys your mind, you see, that they can accept. But when you go beyond, take a few steps beyond, and you wind up in a world of abstractions, say that's not real. That's Jewish. They're right. That is Jewish. That is Yahdus. That is Yahdus. Yahdus is the world of ideas. To the Jew, the world of ideas is the real ideas, the real world. And the whole God of the Jews, that's the Elokei Yisrael. Elokei Yisrael is an abstract, completely abstract concept. So abstract that Yahdus maintains you can't even define it directly. When Moshe Rabbeinu asked God two questions, Adin Nos Rechecho, and Arein Nos Kvodecho, Rechecho, yes. The actions, yes. But not Kvodecho, not the essence. It's so abstract that it defies definition. Defies definition. That's the basis. Part the Rambam, the next part I'm going to skip because all the Rambam mentions over here something that we've gone through a few times. He mentions that the people make a mistake and they think Malachim also are physical. And of course they use the drushes of Chazal to support their view, which went through already. The drushes are all metaphorical, Yad Hashem and everything.
Rationalization
like
of Chazal.
Right, rationalization of Chazal. And of course they deny the idea of Sisrei Torah, which Chazal mentioned.
What?
Sisrei Torah, which Sisrei, Seisa, the hidden parts of Torah, because they say everything is Pshitik Mashmah. Right, so therefore there's no sense of Torah, which was all mentioned. The whole law, Maisim Akava, the whole the Mishnayos, all the Mishnayos that mention that there's such a thing as Sisrei Torah, they have to deny this because according to them it doesn't exist. It's plain, it is plain. Okay. Now the Rambam comes back in the third part of his letter. He says like this. Interesting letter, isn't it? When our book, he says, our book, he means the Chibur is the Yad HaChazaka, was publicized and it reached different parts of the world. So he says, we received notice. We heard a rumor that one of the students in Damascus said that there is no such thing as Tchias HaMeshim because they read the Rambam's book thoroughly. And therefore they said that the soul will never return to the body once it's separated. That's the impression they got from the Rambam paper. So one of the opposers, one of the oppositions to this student in Damascus said, how can you say this? What proof do you have? So he answered, he brought a proof from what we mentioned that we said, what we mentioned in the Chibur, because in the Chibur, in Hilchos Teshuvah, the Rambam says that the whole purpose is Olam Haba. And Olam Haba means where there's nothing physical. So the other, therefore, he says, you see, there's no such thing as Tchias HaMeshim. He says, and the other people, the opposition said, not true, because from Chazal, and from what is known through Masorah, in the nation, among the nation, the fact remains that there is such a thing as Tchias HaMeshim. It is these things mentioned. Yeah. So he answers them, he says, no. He says, it's true, you mentioned Tchias HaMeshim, but that's only a marshal. That's only a marshal. Because the Rambam says that you can't take anything literally. So he says, therefore, the opposition said that the whole idea of Tchias HaMeshim is not literal. And that the Rambam did not believe in Tchias HaMeshim. So there's a tremendous argument about what the Rambam's view was of Tchias HaMeshim. Some said that he didn't believe in it. And it was all a marshal. Others said, no, that he does believe in it. But what about the problem was that if Chris Mason is true, so then he's saying that the soul does return to the body. But the Rambam says that the perfect state is where the soul remains separated. Right? Separated. Because that's the ideal state. That's where you live in the world of reality, the real reality. So he says like this. He says, once this reached us, the news reached us, about the whole debate, he says, yeah. When I first heard the news, he says, I thought to myself that no need to write about it. Why? Because the rumors, the false notions will be dispelled by themselves. Because everybody knows Tchias HaMeshim, and nobody's going to learn this kasha that they ask. There's no kasha at all. No need to write about it. But it wasn't so. He says, because it wasn't long that we received a letter from Taman, and they asked many things. And they said like this. They said, people already concluded decided that the body terminates and it doesn't return to the guf after the separation. And that punishment and the and schar vaynish relates only to the nest of the soul alone. He said, and they learned this from the fact from what we said about Olam Haba. And when they mentioned the language of Lashon Chachamim, which are clear about Tchias HaMeisim, and some of the Lashonis of Nevi'im that speak about Tchias HaMeisim, they said it's a mashal. The Yesh Lasbiro, and we have to explain what the mashal is. So the Shoel, the one who wrote the letter, asked, he said that this Svara, this theory, that the Rambam does not believe in Tchias HaMeisim has been accepted already, and that that's what people believe. They think that there really is no Tchias HaMeisim and that everything's all a mashal. Therefore, he says, they asked me personally for a response. He said, so we answer them on their question. And we explain to them that Tchias HaMeisim is a fundamental principle in Yahadus, and that this principle is the return of the soul to the body, and that you do not allegorize that chazal, but that chazal is pshita kamashmal. It really means exactly what it says. And that Olam Haba, after Tchias HaMeisim, is exactly like we explained in Perek Chelek, which we learned, what the Olam Haba really is. And we thought this would be enough. Enough, tell them that they're wrong, you know, and that Tchias HaMeisim is real. It's not a metaphor, it's not an allegory, it's real, it's plain pshita kamashmal. We thought that would be enough to dispel these false notions. But now he says this year, he says that was in the year Aleph Tav Kuf. But two years later, he says, more letters came from Baghdad, and they said like this: that the person from Taman who asked about these things, he asked the Rosh Hashiva over there, Reb Shmuel Alevi, who is the Rosh Hashiva in Baghdad, and that he, the Rosh Hashiva there, he wrote a little essay on Tchias HaMeisim, and that what he did in that essay was he took the Rambam's words and he said the Rambam was completely mistaken, completely erroneous, and he misrepresented the Rambam. And whatever he could try to salvage from the Rambam, he did, but there was very little that he could salvage. And after all these different writings, the letter from this Rosh Yeshiva reached us. And we saw all the drushes and all the agadas that he gathered. Alright? And what he said was like this. He argued on the philosophers. This Rashi argued on the philosophers, and the Rambam says the ones that he